Mini episode 641 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 641. It's your world's finest pigskin talkers, FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. Coming at you, we are breaking down NFL Week 11, coming off of last week, a week where the Dogs won big outright in most cases. I personally was 7-7. I was 2-1 on my big three, 0-1 on my lock pick for the year. 77-66-3, 16-14 on my big three, 4-6 on my lock picks. The rest of the year, assuming there are no more pushes, I need to go one game over 500 to be above 52.4% for the entire season, which I would wager few, if any, have ever done in the history of this fine business. Speaking of few, if any, have ever done in the history of this fine business, my man Kyle Ross, with his ongoing record of picks year after year, 60% or better, right about in that ballpark there. And once again, this year, hanging out in that particular hood, 6-3 on the picks last week, 34-23-1. For the season. Ladies and gentlemen, my man, Kyle Ross.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you said few ephemeral, I was like, hey, man, what am I, chopped liver? Am I not speaking? Are you cutting my voice out of the program when you do these things? Wow, I got to double check on the production, the post-production on this program here. You know, it's kind of funny. You already kind of hit on the fact that, you know, all the Dogs virtually had their day last week in Week 10. Which made me very happy, generally. Did not make me public happy. I had a buddy who was actually out in Vegas on Sunday, and I was like, what's the scene out there, man? He's like, there are people just with some very long faces right now, especially after those 4 o'clock games, which I always joke with you when we kind of text during the games, is always the witching hour for the public when things generally go very poorly for them. Detroit over Green Bay in the early game, round of games, was the best result for the books all year. And I'd just like to point out, with your record, maybe, you know, I'd almost want you to go over your record again, because this year I've been somewhat proud of you in that you've been giving out more dogs. And your record's very nice, your overall record, but you still cling on to those favorites when it comes to the big three. And have you noticed how your record, as it goes from big three and into lock, actually gets worse? That's very odd. I think you need to start going with dogs. You had a dog last week. I really, really am hoping to hear you start giving out more dogs in those big three, because after all, they are 82-59 against the spread this year. Take the
bad
point.
Bad beat, Ross. I blame bad beats for what is happening
You're
there.
You're going to claim a bad beat when you had Miami? Oh, Lord.
You know, again, the dog that I took last week, you weren't behind me. You were early in the season.
Which is
very
odd.
I was taking locks along my big three. Yeah, you weren't behind me because you were clinging to this archaic belief that the Eagles are much better than the Dolphins.
And I still believe it. And I still believe it. Right? If they play tomorrow, the Eagles would probably still be favored by a touchdown. And I wouldn't fault anyone for that line.
We'll talk about that game
in the next 40 minutes.
That's fine. We'll get to that. This week on the bye, it is New Orleans, the New York Giants, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. We start, as always, with the Thursday night matchup. It is the 2-7 Titans at the 3-6 Jaguars. Welcome to the wonderful world of Thursday night NFL football. Of course, they put this on the part of the schedule that the NFL Network only has and not CBS. They would never taint a major network with this game. 8:25 Eastern time from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call for, again, the NFL Network. This is a game where Jacksonville is laying 2.5. They opened at 3. And I know from getting your picks off air, Kyle Ross, well, this is not one of my big three. This is one where we're going to clash, because I have to tell you again, I know that you're in love with this Tennessee roster, and oh, their roster is much better than you think. They have much more talent on their roster than you think. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to say that I think the team out of the two that's really moving in the right direction is the Jacksonville Jaguars. Based on what we saw last week, based on what we've seen this year, Blake Bortles and this passing game really coming along, it will be a mistake if Gus Bradley, Blake Bortles, and everyone goes in the dumpster at the end of the year, as these stupid teams are wont to do with a tear-down rebuild. Jacksonville's moving in the right direction. I think this game is a referendum on which of these two teams is doing better right now. For me, it's as simple as that. It's the Jags. I'll take the Jags laying those 2.5 points at home, Kyle.
I don't disagree with your long-term view of the Jags. I'll say that. I think that Bradley has done enough this year compared to expectations that he should keep his job. And Bortles, I think, is the real key. He has shown some real tangible improvement, because he did not have a good rookie campaign at all. But he's looked a lot better this year, particularly throwing the deep ball. Now to this game. The second week in a row, the early money came in on the dog. You mentioned how the line went from 3 to 2.5. Last week, my power rankings disagreed with the smart money, and I got burnt by that with Jets Bills. We'll talk about that game later on in the program. That was kind of a phony result, I think. And speaking of phony results, we have Jacksonville's win over Baltimore last week, where they were minus 139 in total yards, plus 3 in turnovers, and oh, by the way, that ending where they should never even had a chance to win the game. They got the field goal as a result of a face mask penalty. And by the way, on that play, not talked about enough, but the NFL admitted an error. There was a false start on Jacksonville. There should have been a 10-second runoff. That field goal never should have happened. They should have lost that game. If they lose that game, I think maybe your soliloquy on the Jaguars sounds a little bit different. My power rankings agree with the smart money this week. I think Tennessee should be under 3, but 1.5 is what I think the line should be here. Titans also do to reverse some poor recent history against the Jags. They're 1-6 against the spread the last 7. Jacksonville's a favorite, by the way. I'll throw that out there. That's not a good idea. They lost outright the only time it happened so far this year to Houston. I'm on the Titans. I'm clinging to them. You know, I'm not saying that this will be a Super Bowl 51 winner, but I do think they are generally better than their record. They were hanging tough with Carolina before a bad interception last week. Give me the Titans, first recommendation of the week.
All right. I knew we were going to differ on that one, albeit, like I said, that's not one of my big three. But we move on to the games on Sunday, and first up here, it is the 4-5 Raiders at the 2-7 Lions. 1 o'clock Ford Field, 1 o'clock Eastern Time in Detroit on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Steve Berline on the call, and this is a game where Oakland is laying 2 points after this game opened as a pick. This is a game that is going to be a little bit different from my analysis of other games this week, because I have some other games. I am a believer, as we've talked about on the show here, that the concept of regression to the mean, progression to the mean, surfing waves, essentially picturing things as biorhythms, that doesn't really comport, quite frankly, with the public expectation of where the public sees teams a lot of times. I think the public looks at this game and it's like, ooh, the Raiders, you know, they're due to bounce back. Oh, here's a ripe opportunity here. I think the public is probably looking at this. Look, the last 2 weeks I went against the Packers because I didn't agree with the knee-jerk inclination of the public to say this is a snapback game. It is for that reason that I'm on the Lions getting the 2 points here, because I don't believe it. The Raiders, again, you'd think that Al Davis still owned the team and Pete Rozelle was still the commissioner with all these 1 o'clock starts that we're getting this year. The schedule maker has been very, very brutal to this Raiders team throughout the course of the season with all these. And I understand if you're playing the Eastern Divisions, there's only so much you can do. But you look at the schedule, and I think that may be as responsible as anything for kind of beating them down in the course of the last couple of weeks. The Lions finally showing some signs of life last week. You know, sometimes it's, what was that Janis Joplin song about nothing left to lose? I can't even remember specifically, but that's kind of where the Lions are right now. I think they're just looser, because who expects anything from them? absolute rock bottom. Everybody's getting clean out of this organization at the end of the year. Nothing to lose. That's a dangerous thing for a Raider team trying to cling to the playoff picture. Give me the Lions to win outright.
Wow! Ricky Morris is chewing the publicly backed road favorites and then saying, oh, yeah, he has a history of doing so. That's odd. I thought you were Mr. publicly backed road favorite. That's who am I listening to here? Who am I listening
selectively
to? I got it. And by the way, it's so nice to hear a Richard Milhouse Nixon fan quoting Janis Joplin. That's unbelievable. I've heard it all in this program. It's funny because when I looked at this game, I looked at it like the Rick Morris that I thought I knew and loved. last week, you correctly pointed out to me in one of the games that I got wrong, or ended up getting wrong, Carolina-Tennessee, because you hate the Titans, as we all know, anyway. But you were correct in pointing out that, the Titans are a bad team and they're off a win, kind of getting a short number, probably not worth the risk. I kind of view the Lions in the same vein. Now, I had them last week. I did not imagine that they would pull the outright upset. When I saw going into like the second and third quarter they were leading, I couldn't believe my eyes. I was like, holy God.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, they are really bad, the Lions, and it makes me trepidatious to back them here. At the same time, the Raiders, who a couple weeks ago I said on this program, their stock seemed a little high for my liking. I think of the five teams in the AFC wildcard race, they're fifth right now, quite frankly. There are reasons not to like them here. As you mentioned, it's an East Coast game. Also, they've been outgained in 7 of 9 games this year. So they may not be, you know, the future may not be now for the Silver and Black is all I'm saying. I'm passing here. I could come up with reasons to go against both sides.
Okay. Yeah, I don't blame you. It is a tough one. This next one, I think, because of the line, is one of many ones this week that are incredibly brutal to try to evaluate. Two teams off of a bye. It's the 4-5 Colts at the 6-3 Falcons. 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Georgia Dome on CBS. Greg Dumble, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. And Atlanta, this line's kind of bounced around. It opened at 4, it went up to them laying 6. The Falcons are now laying 5.5 as we speak. And, again, both teams coming off of a bye, so that kind of negates it on either side there. The Falcons really doing a nosedive here, such that, again, even with the ease of the schedule that we thought we saw for them here, I've reconsidered. I don't think they hang on to make the playoffs. I don't like the direction that they're heading in. For Indianapolis, I made a joke to fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway off air about how they're going to be forced to temporarily upgrade to Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback.
Oh, good.
But that's been, well, look, he's played better. But the thing of it is,
we'll talk about
that
momentarily. We'll talk about that momentarily.
I just can't see that continuing to be the case. And even with Matt Ryan's recent plummeting to earth relative to where he was earlier in the season, to me, it just comes down to the quarterback play in a game like this. And, again, I don't think the Colts are really good enough to beat anybody outside of their division, and I would be, to use your word, trepidatious about taking them just to cover. Give me, very queasily, Atlanta to cover the 5.5 here.
Good pick. Makes me a little less queasy because I was, up until you just gave that pick, getting a little scared here because, to me, when I looked at this week's card, this was the first game that jumped out to me. I know Atlanta has struggled. They actually have failed to cover 5 weeks in a row.
Ooh, okay.
But it's the Colts with a backup quarterback. And, you know, you joke about Hasselbeck. You know, he did win the 2 games. Okay, fine. But who are they against? Houston and Jacksonville by a combined 10 points. One of them was in overtime.
Right.
Both times the Colts were outgained in those games. And this is interesting because you know me, I've been no friend of Atlanta on the program through the years. But I've still got them rated pretty high in my rankings. They have the 7th best point differential in the league still. They're off the back-to-back embarrassing losses to Tampa Bay and San Francisco. I think the bye week allows them to get well, get focused. This is the third instance of two teams coming off a bye meeting this year. The first two were Green Bay, Denver, the game was in Denver, and then last week Arizona at Seattle. Both times the dog won outright, but in retrospect you can make the case that the dog was probably the better team anyway. Mm-hmm. That's not the case here. I know Indy beat Denver. I gave out that pick, by the way, if you remember 2 weeks ago. But I'm sorry, I don't trust Matt Hasselbeck or this flawed Colts roster on the road. I'm laying the number, and I'm recommending the Falcons, a favorite, one of three this week that will get a recommendation.
Some interesting cross-contamination this year. You have recommended some favorites. I have recommended some dogs among my big three plays. Very, very interesting. I certainly applaud your reasoning and your thought process with that game. Up next is the 4-5 Rams at the 2-6 Ravens, or 2-7 rather. 1 o'clock Eastern Time Sunday from M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert, Daryl Roos Johnston, and the lovely Tandalora Oakman on the call in this game. Here, Baltimore is laying 1.5 points. It opened as a pick'em, and this is one where I had fairly strong thoughts on this, but again, I'm going to flinch on making this a recommended play just because, again, Rams, LOLs, you never know what they're going to do. It's almost always the opposite of what you think. But in looking at this game here, in looking at the myriad close losses that the Ravens have suffered over the course of time this year, it feels like there's one that's due to go the other way. And if it's going to, wouldn't you think it might be the week where Case Keenum is making a comeback? Case Keenum, T.J. Yates, it's the revenge of the old Texans quarterbacks in the league these days here. So a testament to the league's quarterback depth crisis on display in this game here. And in looking at it, wouldn't you know it, the one thing that the Rams can do dependably well, and they have a good
defense,
the front seven, but running the ball with Todd Gurley, the only thing the Ravens haven't sucked complete ass at the entire year is stopping the run. They're actually still good at it. Give me the Ravens.
You know, you took pretty much my analysis right out of my mouth. This is a recommendation for me, believe it or not.
Okay.
I'm on Baltimore. Again, a small favorite. By the way, mark me down for that -1 at 5 dimes, if you don't mind. Thank you very much. I see that hanging out like some low. I see that hanging out there. I need to grab that off the tree. Yeah, you talked about the poor luck the Ravens have had. I'd argue they're the unluckiest team in the league. 2-7, all games decided by 8 points or less. That's never happened in league history that a team has started a year with 9 games decided by one possession. Last week, I talked about it with the Tennessee-Jacksonville game. That was probably the worst beat of the year in a series of them for the Ravens. So I don't need to rehash that there. And, you know, I wrote down here in my notes, can't make a case for Keenum. Pardon the bad pun there, but, I mean, he's awful. And, you know, I can always count on you to bring up those rushing stats, and I thought I was going to make you chuckle because I was going to cite it, but you already did. Yeah, give me the Ravens for all the reasons you said.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to be specific, 98.7 yards per game given up on the ground. That shows you that they're as well equipped as you could possibly be to handle Todd Gurley at this stage of his career. Baltimore, though, again, for all the talk about whatever bad beats they might have, there is, by the way, that fixed game against San Diego with the phantom pass interference call that set up the game-winning field goal a couple weeks back. Let's not forget that one. So some of the quote-unquote luck has gone their way. But
not much of it, though.
This is another tough one. Two exceedingly mediocre teams right now, as the records would indicate. The 4-5 Bucks at the 4-5 Eagles. 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Link in Philadelphia on Fox. Dick Stockton, David Deal, and Christina Pink on the call. And this is a game where Philadelphia is laying 5.5, down from 7 initially. And it just, looking at this, just kind of going back and forth, back and forth. Mark Sanchez is going to be in there for Sam Bradford, which, and again, it's kind of a cliche right now, but it's true. He has greater fluidity, I think, in the Chip Kelly offense, but there's always the greater risk of turnovers with him. As far as it goes with Tampa Bay, I don't know. I look at this. I look at the quarterback play here again. There are not many teams in the league where I would think that it might be a slight edge to Jameis Winston at this stage of his development. This might be one of those few games. I kind of go back and forth here. given that I see the gap between them as I'm sure narrower than you do, I got to go with the team getting the points. Give me Tampa Bay for the second week in a row. I'll take a Florida team playing the Eagles. This time it's not one of my big three, but I'll take Tampa Bay getting those juicy 5.5 points, please.
I took Tampa Bay last week, if you recall. We had a bit of a disagreement there, and they pulled one out. It's kind of been some reverse luck. We talk about luck, how it can fluctuate from year to year. Starting to go, although Tampa Bay's 4-5, and they're, you know, not going to the playoffs. They've had some luck go their way. All four of their wins this year have come in one-score games. They've only lost one such contest. Even though they won for me, and I kind of picked them to improve this year, which they've already doubled their win total, by the way, from 2014. There is the small fact that through 59 minutes, they had 3 points against the Dallas Cowboys. That's not very impressive. And I still think the Eagles can be a pretty good football team. I looked at your power rankings. I know I had the Eagles several spots higher in mine. I have them 12th still, despite the 4-5 record. I think they get well. It was a very, very unlucky result last week against the Dolphins. They led that game 16-3. They had a massive edge in total yards, plus 147, almost 2-1 first down. I think the quarterback injury was kind of a shock to the system. It threw them off. There was that wacky go-ahead touchdown for the Dolphins, which bounced off Connor Barwin's head like a million miles into the air, and Jarvis Landry caught it. The Eagles are better than their record. I think the Bucs are probably about as good as theirs. So I'll lay the points for the Eagles. We're getting all my recommendations out early here. This is my third favorite, believe it or not. I'm a little leery of that, but I'm doing it, man.
Wow. How about that? By the way, as far as it goes, I wish we were segueing to the Dolphins next, but I will just say as far as last week goes, winners make their own luck. And the Dolphins under Dan Campbell, I think, are demonstrating that.
Oh,
but,
how nauseating is that?
We'll get to my fish subsequently here. Up next,
yeah.
The 7-2 Broncos at the 4-5 Bears, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Soldier Field in Chicago on CBS. I am Eagle Dan Fouts, Evan Washburn
on
the call.
Hold on. Isn't this one of your big three?
You're right. That's what I do after I do this after a long day. Skip that. We'll come back to it. You're right. Up next, it's the 5-4 Jets. I know I don't have this one at the 4-5 Texans, 1 o'clock Eastern time, NRG Stadium in Houston on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call. Houston is laying 1 point. They are a short favorite.
Let's be honest here. There's really no line in this game. Almost no book has the line up, unless it's something changed in the last half hour.
Well, go check our usual spot. There was one book that had a line, and that's what I'm going off
of right
now.
Okay, well, yeah. I would not go off that. I would be shocked if this was a one-point game when it opened.
I personally will. I'm going with the Jets here. I'll take them to win outright. In terms of, again, Houston's coming off of a short week. I talked before about waves with teams here, and the Jets feel like they're sort of at the bottom of one wave after that abortion of a game against Buffalo. They've been kind of trending down over the course of the last month. It feels like they're due for an upturn. The Texans at 4-5 look like they're due for a nosebleed. I mean, they had one good game against Cincinnati on Monday night. They're 4-5. I'm still not impressed. Give me the Jets. Getting only one.
Whoa. See, I don't know. This is why I refuse to do this. I'm obviously not playing this game with no line. But
okay.
I would be. Situationally, there are some things to like about the guys in green. They're going from a Thursday game last week. Houston's on a short week coming from Monday. And I don't really think Houston particularly played that well. By the way, they were a nice winner for me over Cincinnati. Thank you very much. Double-digit dogs, 2-0, not only get the spread, but straight up last week. That was more about the Bengals just sucking, I thought, than the Texans doing anything. I mean, for Christ's sake, it was a 10-6 game. So I'm laying off here. I kind of actually agree with almost everything you said there that, you know, I'm not buying Houston at 4-5, and the Jets are actually probably better than their record, so.
Yeah. I don't think these teams are only one game apart as far as how good one is, how good the other one is. I'm walking in the Jets getting a point. Yay for me.
Okay.
Up next, it's the Redskins at 4-5 at the 9-0 Panthers, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Obama Bailed Out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. Tom Brennan and Charles Davis and Tony Siragusa on the call. And this is a game where Carolina is laying 7 points, had been 7.5 initially. This is another one that was kind of difficult because, again, I keep expecting at some point, although I haven't picked it to happen specifically in the last couple weeks, Carolina's going to stub their toe, the epitome of a team not as good as its record. On paper, the Redskins, in my gut, the Redskins feel like a team that could pull a shocking result here and be that team that can stub their toe, go to 9-1. But here's the thing. I started looking at it a little bit more, and I started looking at the fact that the Redskins – can't follow up a good performance with a good performance.
Yeah,
they haven't done it
correct.
Yet this year. You look at who they've beaten, not very impressive in my estimation. And the good teams have really kind of handled them. So the expectation that they're going to lose but cover doesn't seem consistent with what they've done. Yes, I very famously had them correctly to lose but cover with Atlanta, and they did. But that's the exception to the rule. If I don't think they're going to win, I'm not going to take them getting the 7. Hence, reluctantly, give me Carolina laying the 7 at home.
This is a pretty easy pass for me. Washington, I told you last week I liked them. I was all over them. And
yep.
They ran your – and I know that although you disagreed with my Washington pick last week, you know, it's certainly the result. Certainly made us both happy because it got your boy Rob Ryan 86. He's gone out of the league. So,
yep.
But just kind of to build off what you said earlier, I've said many times in this program, off a good performance, you typically want to fade Kirk Cousins because he is typically the reason that the Redskins haven't followed up a good performance with another one all year. He's very up and down. So can't really back the Washington football team. Caught myself this week. And at the same time, I'm like you. I'm not in the business of backing an undefeated team right now. We've seen in the last couple weeks that the toes are stubbed, as you so eloquently put it. So I'm passing on this one. My hope, you talk about Carolina eventually stubbing its toe, my hope is that they cover this game and that it will then set us up beautifully next week when they go to Big D to play Dallas, who will have Tony Romo with a week of action under his belt. So that may be the game where the Panthers stub their toe. We will see, though.
Segway alert, the Cowboys are up next. It's the 2-7 Cowboys at the 4-5 Dolphins, a rematch of Super Bowl VI. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Sun Life Stadium in Miami Gardens on Fox. Kevin Burkhart, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call. And this is a game where the Dolphins started out laying a point. The game has moved to a pick 'em with Romo back in there this week. And, Super Bowl VI, you know, whatever revenge factor there may be, maybe kind of ebb because they did go perfect the next year. The NFL's only perfect team winning Super Bowl VII. We all have such fond memories of that, I'm sure. So the revenge quote is not necessarily coming into play. But this is one where, again, it just, in terms of my sense of the tail being due to kind of turn, as I've said this week with a couple of different teams, a lot of close losses for the Cowboys through the course of the season here. They're getting Romo back. It's not going to be a cure for everything that ails them. But in a spot where Miami is coming in feeling really good off that win last week against Philadelphia, I think the Cowboys can steal one. I will take the Cowboys in this game at a pick.
That's certainly the knee-jerk reaction with Romo back, isn't it? And I can't necessarily disagree with you doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Miami, I mentioned it when I talked about recommending Philadelphia this week. Miami off a very phony win. They were dominated. By the way, your boy, Dirty Dan Campbell, has injured a second quarterback in that game. And also, for 3 consecutive weeks, took a safety in the first quarter. I don't know if Mr. Campbell understands. You don't want to be tackled in your own end zone. That's 2 points for the other team.
Okay.
But, you know what? There's a little problem here. My power ratings suggest that Miami should, in fact, still be laying more points. Now, that obviously takes a lot of non-Romo games into effect. You know, the ratings don't necessarily understand that Tony Romo's back. They are numbers, after all. But I'm passing here. Like I said, my hope – I actually hope Dallas loses this game and then Carolina covers this game, like I just said, and that'll set us up beautifully for what I believe is a Thanksgiving Day showdown. That'll be a good one to watch there with the family as I yell wildly about the Cowboys and everyone just wants me to leave. So that'll be good.
Yes, it will. The next of our six games remaining is the 4-5 Chiefs at the 2-7 Chargers, 1 o'clock Eastern. Wait. I don't believe this. USA Today Sports Weekly may have this wrong. They're saying 1 o'clock Eastern time from Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego.
Not at all. That's wrong.
Yeah.
The liberal media has lied to you again, Rick Mark.
It's on CBS with Spiro Dedis and Solomon Wilcox. At any rate, and it's a 3-point line here, Kansas City laying that on the road. And, again, if there's one game this week that encapsulates both teams being due to go the other way, it's the Chiefs at 4-5 with this bloated level of respect that they're getting from everybody now versus the Chargers, the unluckiest team of all time at 2-7 coming off of a bye. Give me the Chargers to win outright. They won't smack me in the face again, I'm sure. Give me the Chargers.
Technically, the Ravens have been unluckier than the Chargers, even though, as you astutely pointed out, their one bit of luck this season came at the expense of San Diego. The Lightning Bolts join the Ravens and also Dallas, who we just talked about, is probably the three teams most looking forward to 2016, don't you think? I think we'll see an increase in wins in all three instances next year. I'm with you here, Ricky, even though – you know, we had a disagreement at the start of the season. Who was better, Chiefs and Chargers? I was on the Chiefs. They treated me quite well last week. I thought they might pull the outright upset. They did pull the outright upset, sending Peyton Manning to the bench. But I can't help but think that result had a dramatic effect on this line. You talked about San Diego being off the bye, their unluckiness. Almost all of their losses have been by one score. I think all but one, including five straight. Ooh. And you'll love this, Ricky, as a San Diego fan, the closet San Diego fan that you are. They've outgained 7 of 9 opponents this year. The only other teams in the league that can claim that, Arizona, Carolina, and surprisingly enough, the Jets. So San Diego, although they have no home field advantage whatsoever with the state of flux their franchise is in, I think they circle the wagons off a bye, catch Kansas City napping, pull off a win, although I still won't give up on the Chiefs to make the playoffs, even if they do lose this game outright. My fifth and final recommendation of the week, a good old-fashioned home dog. Give me San Diego.
Absolutely. San Diego to cover this. We both agree. Up next, boy, whatever happened to this rivalry, it's the 3-6 49ers at the 4-5 Seahawks, 4:25 Eastern Time, CenturyLink Field in Seattle. On Fox, Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, Jennifer Hale, past lounge guest Jennifer Hale, on the call for this game. Seattle now laying 13. It had opened at 10, went up to 12.5, now at a full 13. And this is one where I kind of struggle with it because for as much as I have kind of gotten on the public for kind of knee-jerk reactionary takes to a game, I think I'm with the public's knee-jerk reactionary take to a game here. Blaine Gabbert against a Seattle secondary that has been awful relative to what they should be doing much of this year. It just feels like a total get-well game for Seattle in a complete desperation situation. I don't think I like them to cover if their backs weren't against the wall like they are. But I think this is a game where, again, they're sort of at the end of their rope as far as the direction they're going in. I see a bounce back. I see a bounce back with that secondary against an awful quarterback. And while I'm queasy to take a team that's been as mediocre as Seattle covering 13, take them to cover it, I will. I'll take the Seahawks here.
A win here would certainly fit Seattle's pattern. Their four wins are against Chicago, Detroit, San Francisco, and Dallas. One could make an argument those are the four worst teams in the NFC, and they've lost all the good teams on their schedule while blowing leads, pretty much.
Right.
I can't lay the points. You talk about what happened in the rivalry, well, I'll tell you, the Seahawks have covered the last 9 meetings. So So it's pretty one-sided, at least in the betting window. I'm passing here because, you know, I don't trust Gabbert either. I'd love to take the points, especially with the line move, but I can't. Seattle could be angry, and they could win, like, you know, 17-0, and that'd be a cover.
They very well could. We move now to the Monday night game. It's the 5-4 Bills at the 9-0 Patriots, 8:30 Eastern time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on ESPN. Trico Gruden Salters on the call, and New England is laying 7 points down from 7.5 here. Certainly, the injury to Julian Edelman has affected the line a little bit. As much as I complain about the Rams and the Browns, I feel like the Bills are sort of moving towards that a little bit as far as the team. And again, this is characteristic of the erratic Rex Ryan as a coach, a team that never does what you expect them to do. I think the Bills are starting to get towards that reputation in the betting community, or at least they should be. So, again, this is one where I kind of go back and forth. And certainly Tom Brady has been dominant against the Bills over a period of time here. But, again, I don't think the Pats are running the table, and I don't know that it's going to be the Bills that do it, but maybe I got last Monday night in my head a little bit too much, but weird things can happen there. I don't think the Bills are going to win the game, but I'm just coming down to feel more than anything else because I don't have much of an intellectual case either way. Give me the Bills getting the 7 here.
Underdogs, I can't remember the last one that didn't cover on Monday Night Football this year. I really can't. Yeah. They've been on fire. I don't like this game. I'm passing, and I know we're – so I'm going to save us because I know we're rapidly coming to close the program. So pass. That simple.
Okay. All righty. We go to my big three, and, again, for the year it is 16-14. Still profitable, I might point out, after 2-1 week last week. And, again, we've got a very interesting one here because you've got – the Denver Broncos visiting Soldier Field, and this game, we want to start to set this up before 1 o'clock Eastern time, Soldier Field on CBS. Eagle Fouts Washburn on the call. Past lounge guest, Ian Eagle, by the way. And this is one where Brock Osweiler is going to be in there for Denver, which gives them more stability than they had under Peyton Manning. Can you imagine having said that at the beginning of the year? The only thing that scares me here, because I'm taking the Bears as one of my picks, is that it seems like too popular of a pick. It seems like
Ricky.
Pete Prisco was on them, and that kind of scares me. It feels like, but in my mind, it feels like everybody's out there like, okay, time for the Broncos to wake up. That's the logic I've been using to a pretty good amount of success the last couple weeks here. Is a game that feels that way, and maybe my theory. Maybe I'm the hipster here saying I've been using that theory and now the rest of the world is. The rest of the world is using my theory, and that makes me queasy. But you know what? That doesn't mean my theory's wrong. Give me the Bears to win outright. You could very well make the case that they're at the end of their upswing and I should start going against them, but I'm going to go with them here. I'll take the Bears to cover outright and win.
The Bears have been bet to the role of favoritism, which probably scares you even more. And I'll be honest with you, getting to the end of the program, we got to be sharp. I could probably make a strong case for Denver here. What if Peyton Manning is the problem? I think one could argue was. They still have a good defense, pretty loaded roster. My only issue is I just have not seen enough of Brock Osweiler in real action to back the Broncos, so I'm laying off here.
You know, he's a guy where it's been kind of popular to kind of harsh on him in recent years. And to act as though he is an unworthy successor. I like what I've seen of him in limited bursts. I'm looking at this here. It is the Bears laying 1.5. Up next, the second of the two picks, it is the Sunday night game. It was a flex play here as NBC opted in for the 8-1 Bengals at the 7-2 Cardinals. 8:30 Eastern time, University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on CBS. Michael's Collinsworth Tafoya on the call. Arizona is laying 5, up from 2.5 initially. The Bengals look like crap. It's a short week for the Bengals. I'm queasy about the way that the line has climbed here and the fact that the Bengals really have something to prove in prime time because they've been awful there. Nevertheless, again, we talk about these waves. Maybe it's time to get off the Cardinals wave. Maybe I should. I just don't see it. Cardinals keep it going for another week here. They're looking good, and Cincinnati is now in crisis for the first time this year.
I love when we get to the big three, you're making these risky moves that burn bettors all of a sudden when you made so much sense the rest of the program. Believe it or not here, I would tend to agree with you on Arizona. I would have loved to get them laying only 2.5, which is what the line was before the Monday night result came in. But obviously, once you saw them lose outright to the Texans, you knew this thing was going to go up, up, and away. It has. This is a battle between my number 2 and number 3 rated teams in the league right now, Arizona being 2, Cincinnati being 3. I have no choice but to concede to the all-knowing powers of Bruce Arians at this point. That's a very good football team. I was really, really impressed. I don't think it changes the fact that they were overachievers the last 2 years. This team is definitely better. I tend to agree with you, but I'm not recommending it because of the line, though. No way.
All righty. 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 11. It's the 6-3 Packers after 7-2 Vikings, 4:25 Eastern Time.
This is
PFC so in Minneapolis on Fox. Aikman, Buck, and Andrews, the A-team for Fox, on the call here. Why is this unbelievable?
Because you yell at me all week over text about disrespecting the Vikings, and for the second week in a row, you're going to go against them with your lock. And I'm not going to agree with you for the second week in a row.
You pretty much summed up my approach here completely. Yes. I feel like, again, the Packers are at the end of that kind of run here. The 2 weeks in a row, I said they haven't hit rock bottom yet. I think now they have. Mike McCarthy is very good at doing the game planning week to week. They have a lot to correct here with these wide receivers. They're having problems getting open. Aaron Rodgers needs to make better decisions. Under pressure, under duress, I think they get her done on the road. Give me the Pack here in this game. Getting 1 point, it had been a pick initially. Your thoughts, Kyle?
First time all year that I consider the Vikings a legitimate playoff contender. I thought last week was their best win of the year. And believe it or not, my power ratings suggest they should be favored here at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm laying off this one. I really want to go against Minnesota. I think I'm going to start doing it next week. I know I promised that weeks ago that I would start going against this Vikings team. I'm shocked that they beat both the Rams and the Raiders. But, I mean, the line just, it's not favorable to go against them. It just isn't. Advanced stats, still lukewarm on this team, and I tend to agree. But, I mean, they've got a top 5 or 6 point differential in the league now. You got to give them some respect, especially at home. And they, you know, like the Lions, are going to be fired up to play a team they generally never beat. So I'm laying off here. I think this could wind up being rock bottom for Green Bay. I certainly will be watching this game. It's the national game, and I think it's going to be pretty good. I'm going to have a lot of interest to evaluate the Vikings. I still think they regress down the stretch. Make no mistake about it. The Vikings will regress
very well
down the stretch.
They very well might. Your 5 picks: San Diego, Baltimore, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Tennessee, my big 3, Chicago, Arizona, and Green Bay is my lock. Next week is the holiday. We will have an abbreviated version of the show for Thanksgiving week.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.